Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Niger again. Our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. Thank you again to all of our followers here in the United States and internationally. I appreciate all the comments and the feedback and the opportunity to consult with you guys and to help and educate and demystify and send a message of hope, which I truly believe in and have seen in being involved in this field, which is a privileged opportunity to have individuals tell their stories. And the stories often are filled with pain, with hurt, with confusion, with disbelief, and it's, you know, it really is a privilege to be able to do what I do for a living, and I am grateful for this opportunity. Today I wanted to focus and kind of staying on the, you know, the realm of existential type of thinking is, you know, there's terms like metacognition, which is essentially thinking about thinking. And if we all kind of step back and look at, do any of us do this? I'd say a vast majority of people don't. We think in a very automatic, fast-paced way. And I've mentioned this before, there's no such thing as the unconscious. Everything is conscious and everything is, things are more automatic. And I wanted to kind of focus on how we compartmentalize our thinking into a past, present, and future oriented, kind of landscape. And I've alluded to this stuff in the past, but I want to kind of try to connect it all together, because thinking is really the most crucial part in treating a vast majority of psychiatric conditions, depression, anxiety, bipolarity, even behavioral problems. And, you know, there are some disorders where thinking does require certain medications, such as like schizophrenia, or any of the psychotic disorders, but thinking is something that is really unique and what separates us from every other species is our free will and what we choose to do with that. And there's an incredible power in that. And in doing work in cognitive behavioral therapy, the focus is on cognition, our ability to think. And it's amazing when you can help somebody realize that, you know, those thought patterns that are plaguing you or have plagued you, you have control over that, and we can restructure them to something that is more adaptive, where you start to see yourself, other people, the world in general, differently and through lenses that are not covered in muck and mire. But I found, and I include myself in this as well, that you know when you think about thinking, it's almost like pulling that movie reel apart and looking at things frame by frame. And it's a metaphor that I use a lot in the work that I do with individuals with borderline personality. But, you know, again, this is something that would be applicable in doing, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy for the vast majority of the psychiatric conditions. But I think we all of us, we have a predilection to relegate our cognitions and our thinking to the past and into the future. We don't do a very good job, myself included, of living in the present. Now, the past is an interesting thing, and it's something that we cannot deny, we cannot alter, and we cannot return to. And the past in and of itself, or the summation of experiences, are good, could be bad, could be painful, could be euphoric, could be surprising. But the past and those memories that we have, they do remain in the ether of time. And I think the beauty of conceptualizing that as being relegated to, you know, existing in that time and space is there is nothing, if we just talk about, you know, focus more on like the painful things that have happened to us, like myself, the loss of my mother, the loss of my father, you know, any individual experiences that you guys have witnessed or been exposed to, I think there is a natural desire to want to figure out why. There is, I think, a natural desire to want to get answers, especially when transgressions have been perpetrated on us by other people, and we want to know why those individuals did or didn't do certain things. But if you look at it and step back, you know, at one of those, you know, photo reels, it really is an exercise in futility, because we're not going to get those answers. We're not going to get the answers that I think we've contrived in our head to explain why things have happened to us. And I've worked with enough people who really are fixated almost to a point where they can't get out of their own way, because why did this person leave me? We just take a relation. Why did this person, you know, break up with me? Why did this person abuse me? Why did this person, you know, abandon me? Why did this person, you know, say these things to me? And those are all relevant questions. But, you know, what I say to people is, if you got the answer, does that mean your problems will go away? Absolutely not. And I think another fundamental thing is the fictions that we create in our mind about the answers to the things that we want answers to that we've created. If somebody doesn't give us those answers in the way that we have constructed them in our own minds, we're not going to believe them. Or we're going to think that they're just telling us what we want to hear. And, you know, I think it also, the past has this other kind of thing. I was going to maybe do an episode on this, but I'm going to jump into this woulda, coulda, shoulda mindset. And that is, again, another exercise in futility, woulda, coulda, shoulda thinking. We all do it, but I think if you look at it, woulda, coulda, shoulda, what we're doing is engaging in one of the irrational beliefs. So we're fortune telling. How do we know that if I would have chosen this, I would have been happier? How do I know if I would have done this, or if I could have done this, that the outcome would have been beneficial to my life in the present and the future? So again, it's definitely prevalent in psychotherapy. Like it's nothing wrong, I think, to question. And it's actually, I recommend to the patient I work with is pay attention to your motivation. Paying attention to why you do things, independent of whether or not you're doing things that may be destructive to yourself or to others. You, initially, at the start of treatment, that is not something that you're going to easily be able to focus. But the power of thinking is that we are in control of our thoughts. That's an amazing power that we have, and the free will that God has blessed us with, I think, is an incredible gift that we all, myself included, take for granted. But if you are someone who does a woulda, coulda, shoulda thinking, that could lead to a victim mentality. That could lead to self-sabotage. That could lead to being, blaming. And I talked about, locus of control. It can lead to a highly externalized locus of control where we start to exempt ourselves from any responsibility that we have in the path of life and the choices that we make. And do we make mistakes? Absolutely. And falling down is an accident. Staying down is a choice. And the goal of thinking is not to make excuses. You make adjustments. And we get caught up in the excuses. Go back to the episode I did on the irrational beliefs, not to go through those again. But, we get caught up in, that why. That what if I would have done this? What, should I have done that? Could I have done that? And get caught up in our own thinking. And what does that serve? It is an exercise in futility. If you step back and look at it, it's like, yeah, how does that help me in any way? What if I ordered sushi? Would I have had a better meal than the steak I ordered? I mean, why do we engage in that? I think sometimes it stems possibly from the numerous, depending where you are in the world, the numerous opportunities we have in front of us in terms of the choices that we make. But it can also be that mindset of woulda, coulda, think, woulda, coulda, shoulda thinking can be incredibly paralyzing. And really could help us to just maintain stuck and in a place almost to get that self-loathing. And again, really does serve no purpose. And then, so that's that whole part of the past. And the one of the episodes did on the wake of the boat metaphor. Once the wake is created, there's nothing that wake can do to create, have any impact on where we're going. And that is, again, an incredibly powerful mindset to say, like, yeah, I can do things. I can choose other things. I can choose to do something about it. And not doing something is also making a choice. And I have a little frustration with people who complain and do nothing about it. So that's just my perspective. I mean, we all have a right to complain, but what are you going to do about it? And don't worry about the end result. Worry about taking steps forward. And this is where our focus on the past is very much a part of our daily lives, and our focus on the future. It's Sunday. How many patients do I have this week? How many valves am I going to get done? Who's going to call? What's this? And there's something, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, construct of like kind of term like memories of the future. And, we mourn the things that we think we have lost. We mourn the things that have may or may not have happened in our lives, and whether they're regrets or result of bad choices or dreams not pursued, that we can also mourn memories of the future. Take a relationship, then you imagine that you were going to marry this person and you were going to live in this house and then in this town and in this neighborhood and drive this car and go on vacation to these places and see yourselves growing older. And we create this fiction in our mind. And if that doesn't turn out, we mourn that. We mourn a loss that hasn't even happened. We mourn a loss that we've created. And I'm not talking by fiction. I'm not saying psychosis. I'm just saying we create. This is not about like manifesting your destiny. This is about, living, very future oriented. And sometimes, God gives us the grace for today. We don't have it for tomorrow yet. And this is something that I have to continually work on. And I talk about mindfulness and I talk about being present. And it is difficult for me. And I think it's difficult for a lot of us to slow down because, Julie and I were talking like, can't wait for the new Seinfeld movie to come out. That's future oriented. And I'm waiting for that. I can't wait to see Springsteen again. That's future oriented. There's a whole range of emotions that could come with that. But, living in the present, I don't really have an I really don't have a specific answer for it. I just know that it's something that is necessary and that is crucial, and to be mindful. And I've been trying myself, to slow my thought processes down. I have a lot of passion and I'm very extroverted, and I just my mind is filled with tons of ideas, and they're filled with tons of ideas that are all future oriented. So I guess this is the paradox. Like, is it better to think about the past or is it better to think about the future? I don't know. I think the past is important if there's things that we could use that may have been destructive or unhealthy and make corrections. Yes, that I think is an essential part of how to effectively utilize the past. And I don't think it's necessarily bad to think about the future. And I'm not talking about like living like a gypsy, like a nomad, just hey, whatever happens and have no plan. I mean, I guess there are people that do that, but living future, I think we should, it behooves us to have some semblance of planning, saving, whether that's education or thinking about a career or thinking about marriage, those are fine. But I think when we create these memories, And we look back, and this is how the woulda, coulda, shoulda thinking, these are all intertwined. And again, all about thinking and all about metacognition and living in the present. And I notice a huge change in my own stress level. And I mentioned this in one of the podcasts recently that, Julia brought this up and it sticks with me and was really transformative. I was like, oh my God, I have so many vowels I have to write. I got all these people to see this week. And she's like, no, you get to write evals. And I was like, wow. So you see that even when you're in this field, you don't always see things from this, just because we have these degrees doesn't mean we have all that wisdom that we can always apply to ourselves. But that was really transformative, and my level of gratitude, these are things that on the episodes that I do that are not necessarily disorder focused, living from a place of gratitude has really helped me in shaping just the way I approach things. I grocery shop on Sundays and just, God, thank you for allowing us to be able to afford nice groceries and gratitude. And to me, I think that's the best way that I can suggest, to be more present minded. Again, Julie in the background, but stepping back, I'm grateful that we have running water, and it's a different mindset that I think can pull us out. Again, that wasn't planned, but it's a perfect mindset. And my mind actually went there, like, God, I'm just grateful that I have a wife. I'm grateful that she's healthy. And I'm grateful that she's was getting water. And that's, to me, I guess I'm realizing as I'm talking that that's present minded. And it's maybe just noticing the things like that we have. Not the things that we don't have, and we tend to lament.
I'm standing here and trying to add.
Oh, gee, Ann?
Yeah, I am. Go on. I'm adding. Hi, everyone. Jeez. I'm listening. I'm in the background as usual, but I almost want to say,
you're a sidler.
If you can stay in the present moment now, just something that just came up for me. I struggle with that. I think every human being does, unless you're Gandhi, or some, very, spiritual Buddhist type person. I think of it as a game of like tug of war. I remember in gym class that there was always there was a flag in the middle of the rope and there was tug of war. I like to think of being in the now is that the flag in the middle of the rope. The past pulling in one direction, you get the future pulling in another direction, and it is perpetual. It doesn't stop. If we allow it to continue, which we do, it's our nature to do it, depending on what kind of society you live in. In the United States, it's very easy to worry and obsess about tomorrow. We have been conditioned to be this way. This has a lot to do with, I'm just putting something out there in particular is universities. How kids getting into university. Well, when I was going to school, 3.0 was like a 3.0. That was the highest GPA you could get. Were we supposed to like do extracurricular activities? Yeah, within reason. Now, and over the past few decades, it's been the change in all of that. The expectation has been astronomical in terms of 3.0 is not even 3.0. It's not even a thing. It's not the new norm. It's like changing the norm. So the norm is now higher. And, if you want, so again, the pressure, the expectation, now, we have social media, we're comparing to, and I've talked about this before. I am so grateful to have been raised in the late 80s, mid through the 80s. That's basically, I'm not a boomer, I'm a Gen X, I guess. I don't know. I don't really pay attention. But we played outside. I'm not going to get into it. I said this, I think, last episode or two episodes ago. We rode around on our bikes. We weren't on phones. We didn't even have phones. Okay. Call waiting. That was the big deal when I was, and then caller ID. So moving forward, with the boat metaphor, I feel like it's important as we use it a lot in our treatment. I use it a lot in treatment. We get it from, Dr. Wayne Dyer, late Dr. Wayne Dyer, who's fantastic. I highly recommend you to download Excuses Be Gone, which is an excellent, I think, cognitive behavioral approach, giving, a historical context, literary context, scientific context, and kind of pulls everything all together with the great people who have come before us, who have really been very well-rounded and very in touch and grounded and, very, very, I think, pivotal people in our history. But he talks about if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And if you look at something like your job, and you hate your job. There's some people out there they hate their job. If you're lucky, I think you love what you do. And that's sad because I wish that more people love what they did. But it really is all an attitude. If it really comes down to it, happiness is a choice or acceptance is a choice. It's how do you make of it? It's just like what Kaur said about the evals. Listen, I do the same exact thing. I have to do this. Oh God, I got to do this. Oh, really? No, you get to do this. This is an honor and a privilege. This is something like, the bigger the blessing, the bigger the burden. I don't want to get into the nitty gritty personal stuff, but I have that tug of war in my mind, and it's very, very hard, and it's like exercising muscles that you're not used to using, and. In the scripture, and I'm not going to quote scripture, and I'm not, certainly not a Bible thumper or whatever you call it. I'm a spiritual person. I believe in God, but I do not quote scripture. But it does say throughout the Bible, all is well. And when I was doing my DBT training and my CBT training, when I was in my last master's program before becoming a prescriber, I had the most incredible experience, a learning experience, in terms of using myself as an instrument of peace through this program that I went through. And it really helped me evolve as a human being, but it also taught me a lot about what I was thinking about and what was important to me. And then subsequently winding up working on being in the moment. I kind of led me into a Buddhist bent in my life and where I really kind of focused on Buddhism, Taoism, and all that. But if you really want to be in the moment, we're in a moment. And if you look at it from a spiritual context or a Buddhist context, that this is really just a dream that we're living. And if you look at it from an Einstein perspective or Dr. Robert Planck, we're living in an environment which is all particles. And we're spiritual beings having a temporary physical experience. But if if we really want to be in the moment, I think that coming back to right here, right now, I'm okay. That was one of the groups that I used to run when I was working as a group leader and facilitating on an inpatient unit and partial day program. Right here, right now, are you okay? Well, yeah. Right here, right now, I'm okay. Well, you might not be, but it's really kind of a way to kind of rein yourself in and say right here, right now, because really all we have is right now. And what I just said was then, and I haven't said anything yet, but now I haven't said anything. So if you can kind of, I mean, Cora set it up perfectly, and I'm just kind of adding like a kind of an addendum. So the boat metaphor I revisit a lot of times. It's almost like reading that book. It's so simple, but it's almost like reading that book that if you read it, you love it, but then you put it away, but then you take it out a few years later, and then like you get more out of it. Like it hits you different. It's kind of like the T.S. Eliot poem. It's kind of like at the end of all of our, the meaning of life is at the end of all of our travels is to arrive from where we started and know the place for the first time. This is sort of what life is like. So, in my opinion, the boat metaphor hits me because how often do we have to stop and pinch ourselves and shake ourselves out of living in the past? Because the boat, we're driving. You could be sitting on the boat, not moving. Okay. We have that. We have moments where we're idle. We have moments where we're catching our breath, and we have moments when we're in survival mode. And let me tell you, I've been in survival mode for years. I know what that's like, and I know how it works, and it does work until you come off of survival mode. That's a huge and very difficult transition to make. You know, and that's a whole different episode, which we could talk about further. But when you're driving the boat, you're looking forward. And the only thing that's behind you is the wake. So the question is can a wake drive a boat? And the answer is no. So I myself admit 100%, I do get caught up in the past. I do have to remind myself and reground myself. And it's a daily practice. It's probably a practice I do several times a day where I'm like, okay, I'm good. Because we can get very tripped up in our pasts. You know, we can, some people are victims of things that have happened to them in the past. So they know very well what anxiety is. And anxiety is normal. And it's self-preservation. It's what we are biologically designed to have, is anxiety to protect ourselves from danger. However, if someone has had a horrible experience, and it led to anxiety, they know anxiety. They're familiar with it. If people have panic disorder, they know, oh, geez, I know I can have a panic attack when I'm on the highway. Oh, God. So anxiety about anxiety. So it's like you have, I think you said it earlier, something about thinking about thinking.
Metacognition.
Yeah. So it is metacognition because that's energy, right? So if you're anxiety about your anxiety, I've struggled with insomnia. I've shared this with you. I'm more of an anxious person than a depressed person. I'm a mother. I mean, when you're a mom, you know, anxiety is just part of, you know, the repertoire. However, I've struggled with insomnia, on and off through the past 20 years. And I know what brain spiders are. One of my clients back in the day called them brain spiders. I never shook it. I thought it was brilliant. And I know what it's like to tell this thing in my brain, no, I'm not going here. I now have been able to kind of reconfigure how I think about things. When I send love to it, it disappears. If it's a practice of like, okay, this is not okay, this is not real, or this is very anxiety provoking. This is something that could happen. This is something that hasn't happened yet or did happen. I don't want it to happen again. I send love to it. I send love to it. And that gets me out of my head and into my heart. I also pray. I ask God for help with this. I hand it over, you know, and I love the serenity prayer for that reason. You know, God, give me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference is probably one of the most important things to remember as a human being. But being in the now is all about, if you want to use your five senses, sixth sense is body movement. They've added that to the list, which I always, you know, advise, you know, yoga positions. You don't have to go to yoga class. You can just do yoga positions. You can roll on your back to ease your central nervous system from anxiety. But if you think about this, and I use this with my clients a lot, like a bin, you know, the moving bins, I order a lot of them so I can move things around and organize in the basement. So these clear bins, fill it with, think about each sense of sight, smell, taste, sound, touch, and then movement. Think about these different categories and anything and everything in those categories that comforts you. Like, for example, I like the smell of jasmine. So I have this serum that I use that smells so good, but it grounds me just smelling it. Lavender is another one that grounds me. I don't love the smell of lavender, but it's a very grounding anti-anxiety medication, kind of holistic, that has been around for centuries. Rosemary is the same way. There's so many other organics. I'm not going to go there, but sight. So what can I look at? What can I hear? The best thing to do is combine the sensory things, right? Like, so I would say, if I want to feel good, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to go for a walk and I'm going to smell fresh mown grass. I'm going to be in the sun. I'm going to be hearing birds and I'm going to be walking on the ground, which is very, very grounding. So that smell, that sight, that sound, walk on the beach. Not everybody's near a beach. I'm not on the beach. I have to drive to the beach. But nevertheless, I can walk anywhere. And you can see the trees. It reminds you that there's more to you than you. And, you know, oceans are very famous for that. You look at an ocean, you're like, whoa, okay, I'm, you know, this is, and here's me. But I find that those things can help us stay in the now. And I think that that's coming back full circle, is really about how am I right now? How to get back to right here, right now, I'm okay. Right here, right now, I'm okay. So if it brings you back, so what I did, and I don't know if I've shared this before, I used to work on an inpatient unit, and it was a very chronic inpatient unit. And I was dealing with a lot of people who were really struggling very much with groundedness, to say the least. So I ran this group, and what I did was I used a lot of like physical tactical, you know, like you do like the squash ball and all that stuff. But what I found was, if I used candy, so there, and I know it's not good for you, but I think in a pinch, there's those sour candies, like the sour spray. We actually practiced that on the unit. That was with the adults, and it was great because it jolts you into the now. If you spray and your salivary glands are like, it jolts you into a present moment. So the mind is so complex that it drifts like a cloud, but really when the body is still here. So that was one thing. Another thing that we used, and I use this on the adolescent units, were the elastic bands around the wrist. And then every time that you feel, you know, stressed out, pulling the elastic and letting it go, hitting the wrist on the pressure point can sometimes regroup and bring you back into the now. Ice cold water on your pressure points. That's another one. Cold shower, hot shower, doesn't really matter. But again, like doing aromatherapy in the shower. So you get the sense of, you know, the smell, the just the whole vibe of everything kind of bringing you or calming you down. The other was the mindfulness DBT bent on this, which is one of the modalities of DBT, is one of the last modalities of DBT of several, is mindfulness. And mindfulness is what we're talking about. Mindfulness is just about being in the now. So there are a bunch of exercises. I won't get into all of them, but one I like is taking face cloths, putting them underwater, spraying them with lavender, scrunching them up, put them in a little plastic bag, and keep them in the freezer so that when you're having a really hard time and you want to ground yourself, you're getting a physical experience. So you pull it out of the freezer, you take the towel out of the bag, and then you start pulling the towel. And the towel becomes it defrosts. And at the same time, you're getting the aroma of lavender. And the aroma of lavender is clinically studied to and proof that it decreases anxiety. You've probably seen that all over the place already. And again, that's old school. That's old wives' tales. That's centuries, years old. Another one is taking an orange and like an orange like you can eat, not like a I don't know what kind of orange, just regular orange, navel orange, and put it in the freezer, let it freeze, so that if you're having a really hard time, you can take the orange out, and if you know it's going to be a rough one, you hold the orange. The freezing coldness will bring you into the here and the now. And eventually you can peel it, which is touch, then you smell the aroma of it, then you can eat it, and that's a prolonged kind of coping mechanism that can kind of, which really does work with a lot of folks. I've had a tremendous amount of feedback about that and the towels. Again, and the towels, just to bring you back up one thing I forgot. It is, and then you just put it on your face. Like you can just, so there's touch, there's smell. If you can hit a lot of points, bottom line is they're just tangible examples of what can actually help in the moment that I've used with my clients and I've used personally. Yoga is an excellent, I haven't done yoga since the pandemic. I'm full of it. But I remember when I did yoga and getting into those really difficult positions is very metaphorical for life. And what if you go into a gentle yoga practice, you could do it right on YouTube. You don't have to join an expensive gym or a yoga center because it can be expensive. I know that. But you can do very like low impact, very, very calm yoga, but you're moving. And then when you get into these difficult positions, you breathe through them, you sit with them, you tolerate them. That is life. It's going breathing, breathing, getting oxygen to that difficult stretching of the muscles. And the next step, so that the next time you do it, it hurts less, so that you're able to do more. And so that's why the body and the yoga metaphor is excellent for stress relief because it's clinically proven to decrease stress. Again, I could go on and on, but I overheard the thing. I wasn't planning on speaking today, but I felt inspired to. Thank you so much for all of your follows. Thank you for listening to my stories or watching my stories on Instagram. I appreciate it. God bless you, and we'll talk to you next week. And please, please, please call. Give us feedback. Call us if you need, or if you want a consult, or if you want to just share your story with us.
Well, thank you. So, metacognition, thinking, Julie did an episode before on all those different grounding techniques, so they can go back and learn in more depth with those. But I guess that's more problematic from my perspective when we find ourselves focused on the past. Focus heavily on the future, and it is a work that I engage myself to stay present-minded. But I don't think you can be present-minded without being future-minded, because we have schedules and we have maybe a phone call we need to return. We didn't put that in our calendars. I'm simply, look, coming from the perspective of living again from a place of gratitude, coming from a place of gratitude and paying attention to where our mind is and the power that we do have to control our thoughts, even if there is pain. You can get yourself out of it. And it you know, therapy is such an important, especially cognitive therapy, is such a valuable tool, because it really does change the way we view things. And it's all about perspective. But I think, you know, just asking yourself, when you find yourself stressed, ask yourself, where am I? Am I back there? Am I out there, or am I here? And it takes time, it takes work, but, you know, the whole concept of neuroplasticity and the brain's ability to grow new neural connections, it's amazing. It's amazing what our minds are capable of, both in the positive sense and in the destructive sense. So I know we covered a lot of different topics, but these are things that I think are universal, that we all experience. And slowing ourselves down and paying attention to our motivations are crucial, because we can't change something until we first become aware of it and to notice things. And like I said, we have grace for today, and tomorrow's got its own challenges and blessings, and we will confront them with the abilities that we have. And I don't know. It's just something that I really wanted to touch on, because I know you guys like a lot of the esoteric and philosophical ones, but you know, you're never without hope. Mental health is a viable field. It has tremendous success rates, but it takes work. This stuff doesn't happen overnight, but you know, I just thought it was relevant to dedicate a specific episode to the past, present, and future and metacognition, because this is something that we all experience. And thanks for all of your support and for following us and for your comments. And I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of you guys who are coming from faraway places. But until next time, feel free to reach out, 617-750-9411, East Coast Standard Time in the United States. You can email me directly at psychologyunplugged@outlook.com. You could get a hold of me through Psychology Today, and you could follow us on Facebook at Psychology Unplugged, Psychology_Unplugged_. So until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and be well. Bye, guys.